This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
So 253. What did you watch this week? My name is Mike.
And my name is John.
I didn't watch a whole lot this week, John.
I watched a number of shows, but I watched zero movies.
I got two movies under my belt.
Were they newbies or were they reruns?
Oh, no. Two new to me. Both of them new to me.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. Both of them new to me. And new in general. Like, they came out this year and last year type of thing. It might even both came out this year. Yeah. So not like new to me, but it came out in the 70s or something. Just
Right.
Yeah.
All around new.
Yeah. Let's see here.
Show-wise, though, I mean, I'm looking at it, and I'm like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 shows. So that's not nothing.
That's true. Let's see here. I guess This Is Us.
The Ride.
Yeah. So we meet adult Deja, who is apparently a medical student and all pregnant, but we don't know who dad is.
Oh, that's Annie.
No, that's Deja.
No, I'm pretty sure that's Annie, because Deja was talking to him at the end and he had his arm around her, but I'm pretty sure Annie's the one that was getting in the car.
Nope, that's Deja.
I'm going to fight you on this one.
You can, except I'm positive. Not okay. Pretty sure. I'm 1,000% positive. Deja's the pregnant one.
Why are you 1,000% positive? Give me your logic. Tell me this.
Because that's Deja. That was a medical student and who was pregnant.
Hold on. I'm looking
up
full
cast. It's a misnomer because you see, earlier in the episode, the whole thing is we see Randall and Beth bringing home baby Annie. So it's like a red herring that you assume the adult is, but it's not. It's the typical This Is Us fashion. It's Deja. Annie's the one that's in the car that knows she's pregnant and is driving them to see Rebecca. It's that misdirect. A typical This Is Us misdirect.
Why does she look so different, though?
Don't tell you. Oh, nope. I just did a Google. Is Annie pregnant on This Is Us? And it comes back. It's Deja.
Huh.
No stranger to curveball to the audience. This one, This Is Us, tossed us a big one on Tuesday night episode, revealed that Kate was pregnant revealing us that Deja's the one that was pregnant.
Interesting, because I legit thought that they were doing the whole Annie, because you're right. He had that whole speech where he's talking about, you know, I'm going to look in your eyes and I'm going to look in my grandchild's eyes and say, hey, I know that those are Annie's eyes.
Oh, yeah. No. It's a huge, huge curveball that they like to throw, you know, those red herrings they like to do. But no, it's definitely Deja who's pregnant, which does throw completely off Randall saying, like, you know, he didn't know his family, but he's going to know his grandkids' family because of his blood in them and everything. And then Deja's the pregnant one.
Yeah.
But.
Okay. Oh. So continuing on then, now that we've gotten that part out.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was another one of those vignette episodes where we get to see the ride home from the hospital from multiple different Pearsons.
Yes.
And, you know, the trials and tribulations that each of them went through. So you had Randall and Beth with the DQ Snickers debacle. When Annie was coming home, you've got Kevin and Madison, where they're being followed by the paparazzo. You have Jack and Rebecca with the three original babies.
Yeah.
And you've got Toby and Kate, who I wanted to thump Kate upside the head.
Because she wasn't, you know, taking the hint.
Yeah, because she was Kate, and she was being Kate. And, you know, basically, I can't even think of her name, but the surrogate's like, you know, I can't do this right now. I'm sorry. I can't talk to her. I can't see her. And Kate's like, no, you have to. And Toby's like, dude, back off. Relax. And then Kate's like pouting. And we said it was going to be an open family. He's like, yeah, and maybe she'll come around. But right now she can't deal with it.
I saw what Randall went through, and I don't want him to. I don't want, you know, Haley to go through that either. And
yeah,
you know, blah, blah, blah. And Toby's like, yeah, I know you don't want that, but oh well, that's all you can do.
Right.
It is what it is. Now,
she said she can't handle it. She might change her mind. She might not. Either way, it's her call. You can't force this woman to do anything.
Yep.
Fucking stuck up Pearson.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it was a good episode, but it was basically a This Is Us vignette. You know, let's see what the ride home was like for everybody and see how they compared and contrasted. And like you said, we got the flash forward to apparently adult Deja and Annie.
Yeah.
And, you know, oh, you're pregnant. Oh, you're going to tell anybody, but we don't know who the daddy is. And, but then we get that big, you know, again, This Is Us twist where they're all gathered to see Rebecca. And then that one vehicle pulls up and starts honking a horn. And Randall goes, oh, look who it is. And they wave. But of course, we don't get to see who it is. So we're supposed to go, oh, who is it? Who is it? Which I'm not going to do because they'll tell us eventually.
I think my favorite part of the whole episode was how Madison hailed the paparazzi person that was following her and Kevin.
Yes.
Because we get to see Kevin and his dad kind of acting the same way, angry on the way home type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like how Madison was just like, look, give me your business card. I'll call you. When he goes out for a run, he goes out every Tuesday. Well, make sure he's wearing no shirt. And he's got, you know, his package is showing. I like how she's like, gross.
Yeah.
I thought I like how she handled the paparazzi person. And then she's like, I'm going to drive home. You're going to sleep. And he did. Mm-hmm. And then she left him in the car and brought the kids inside.
Yep.
I thought that was phenomenal.
Absolutely.
And she's like, yeah, no, she's they're sleeping. You needed to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think he was very sincere in his proposal. So I thought that was good.
Yep. And he it was also nice seeing him interact with Jack in the dream state.
Yeah, that was cool. That was cool.
Yeah, I like Jack's knowledge there where he was like, you know, I spent all of my life trying not to be my dad. You're spending all of your life trying to be me. How about you just learn from me and just be you?
Yeah.
Which made a lot of sense.
Yeah, it did make a lot of sense. We didn't have any Zoe this week.
No, but we had the rookie.
Boy,
they certainly did tie that all up, didn't they?
Well, they always do. I mean, basically, it was done with and over with.
Yeah, like no mention of him at all. West barely has any bruises left.
Well, he stove up a little bit, but I mean, yeah, he's already out of the hospital, so it's either like there was an undisclosed amount of time that passed, like a week or two.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, unless they decide they're going to bring it back later on, but it does. It does very much feel like it's been completely wrapped up and resolved.
Yep. And we got one of the fastest introductions to undercover work and then throwing a rookie right into it. And again, my favorite character on this show continues to be Bradford. And And he, like, his reaction was the most realistic. He's like, yeah, you're just playing in this. They're professionals. They're going to get you killed.
Yep. Yep. I did like how she basically was like, well, I wanted him to be proud of me. Oh, my God, that sounds so pathetic and sad as soon as they said that.
Yeah.
And I can't think of her name, but Nolan's TA was like, no, he's your FTO. He's your TA. Like, you want his approval. That makes perfect sense. I like how she basically like, no, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
So
now I wanted to discuss this with you. Because one of the big things that was going on in here seemed kind of minor, but at the same time, the whole Nolan going to school and whether or not he should disclose he was a cop.
Yeah.
What'd you think about all that?
Well, all right. So I see both sides of that.
Yes. Really.
Like, I see. Yeah. All right. I can see why he was torn. It was believable why he was torn. Because in one way, like, all right, he's not some podunk police officer, like, or some Maine police officer, even for that matter. He's on the LAPD. As a whole, they don't have a great reputation. As a whole, you know, everyone there, like, you have all the strife and protesting and everything that's going on right now. And, you know, a big city like LA is really going to be feeling, you know, like New York City or any other big city that's not in Maine. So I could see why he would not want to make it known, because he just wants to go and take his classes and he doesn't want to deal with people asking him police questions or treating him with hostility without getting to know him, just judging him based on the fact he has a badge.
Right.
But then at the same time, I can see the other end of like, but if I'm honest and upfront with them, that, you know what I mean? Like, I can see both sides of it. I really don't know what the right answer is.
I don't think that there is one. And I think that that's why it was such a good question for the philosophy class. Because, yeah, on the other hand, these people are like, I don't want to. I love the teacher's response. They're like, what if I admitted to something illegal in class and he's a cop? She's like, then you're stupid.
Yeah. This is a safe place. This is not a safe place. This is a college class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No places are safe. Idiot.
Yeah. I did like that. This is not a safe place. Oh, and do you think they're going to send him to infiltrate your Black Lives Matter group? No. Matter group? No, it's not. Look at him. No. Like, I did appreciate the philosophy teacher with all of it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I thought that was good. But, yeah, I was of the same mind. You know, I totally get that he wouldn't really want to broadcast that. He's not wearing the uniform. But the other thing is, like, if you like, when I was working at Linens and things, I would take off my name badge. And then as far as anybody was concerned, I was not affiliated with Linens and things. So if I got in a car crash or something like that, even without his uniform on, he is still an officer. Like, he would still have to be a reporter. He would still have to identify himself, et cetera.
Yes.
So that also adds a wrinkle to it where no matter what, he's representing the badge.
Yes. Yeah, even when you're off duty, you're not really off duty.
Right.
To an extent, you know.
So, it was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But I enjoyed the episode overall.
I did as well.
And then in the end, Bradford told Chen, you did a great job in there. Basically, you know, he was proud of her.
And this is this was also the episode where West meets his new boyfriend, the cowboy cop.
I loved it when he's like, yep, I'm a police officer on a horse. And I actually had to look it up because I was really curious, you know, if that was true or not. Like, does LAPD have a mounted division? And they do. And they have a stable that can house up to 40 horses. They currently have 35 active officers in the stable, in the division. There's a lieutenant, 4 sergeants, and 30 patrolmen. They're primarily used for demonstrations, crowd control, interactive learning classes, if you will, like, you know, touch a truck or something like that, but not so much, like standard enforcement, if you will.
Gotcha. So, oh, that's good to know.
But I was curious. Is this a real thing? So I looked it up. But if you notice, you do see him later on. He rolls up in a patrol car. So, I mean, yes.
Yeah,
little of both.
So now they're kind of setting up like, well, West has always said that he wanted to go on SWAT. We'll see about that. But now Nolan's going to go back to school so that he can be a TO. And yep. Shen has gotten a taste of undercover, and yep. maybe that's going to be her path. It's nice to see that they're setting them up for character growth so that it's not just going to be where they're perpetually rookies.
Yes. Well, because they even said again in this episode that like the TO whatever scenario ends very soon.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, it does.
Yeah.
So along those lines, a show that I did not particularly enjoy this week, and I think I'm just about done with, was The Sinner.
Yeah, this episode 4?
Yep.
Maybe episode 5, something like that. I think there's only 8 episodes, so part of me is like, maybe I want to finish it out, but I don't know. It's just, I'm not a fan of Matt Bomer's character. He is, like, his erraticness and his mental health issues are just over the top.
Yeah, they're almost unbelievable. They're so ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. Like, legitimately, that's a great reference point.
He felt like a Walmart version of Tyler Durden. Like, he wants to introduce chaos and letting go and nothing matters to the world, but he does it in, like, the most banal, shitty way. You know, with the little fucking the little triangle pointy origami thing that we played with in grade school, you know, pick a color, pick a number.
Yeah, that's supposed to be it's random chaos. That's and we just have to do what it says. And
So I was not a fan of this week's episode. I didn't hate it, but also, like, I can't believe Harry just kind of, like, followed along with him and was like, okay, come on, you're getting out of hand. Let's go over here.
So in episode 5, apparently Jamie returned to the party to seek out Kyle for a private session. Kyle recited phrases that Nick would use but refused to elaborate on Jamie's destructive path. Jamie then bludgeoned him to death and went to a school office to clean up and dispose of bloody evidence, and then he returned home.
Huh.
Harry shows up at the crime scene, seeing Sophie questioned by NYPD. He suggests that Jamie should confess everything, not let anything be further investigated. Jamie refuses, and both are questioned. Harry explains to Sonia that she was a random target, because that's what it was. That's why they're going down there. Nick picked her out as a random target of someone to decide if the origami thing was going to kill her or not.
Right.
But she's still fearful. She approaches Layla and relates what Harry told her about Jamie. Layla kicks Jamie out of the house. Jamie goes to Harry's cabin and provokes an attack in front of Harry's grandson, Eli, seemingly to bring Harry up to the level of disorderly behavior that Nick had instilled in Jamie. Okay. After Harry's daughter restricts him from seeing Eli indefinitely, Harry leaves Jamie an apologetic voicemail. Jamie begins to stalk Harry and Sonia, who have
begun
dating.
Harry apologizes to Jamie?
Yep.
Okay.
Harry and Sonia apparently have begun dating. Jamie trespasses in and around her home, but while initially fearful, she takes the opportunity to study him for art. Seriously. As Jamie recalls the beginning of his and Nick's friendship, he confesses to killing Kyle to Layla, his wife, and now doesn't recognize the man she married. He tries to connect with her socially, but has another breakdown when shunned in public. He contacts Harry and leads him to the pit that Nick had dug for Sonia. The two men carry wood and a plastic hose, and Harry realized that this was another test of trust that Jamie and Nick used to do together. Jamie gives a written confession of the two murders to Harry to coax him into participating in the same test. Harry loses a coin toss and goes into the pit and is buried alive, holding the hose for air. But Jamie removes the hose, leaving Harry gasping for air, hoping he will be unearthed.
This is all in episode 5?
Part 7. No, that's 5 and 6.
Okay.
Part 6. After 8 hours, Jamie digs up Harry and takes him to his cabin. As part of the deal, Harry burns the written confession. Seriously? This is the dumbest season. Jamie believes they are now mentally connected more than he and Nick were. Adding that Nick wanted Jamie to be the one to kill Sonya, forcing Jamie to crash the car and let his friend die. Jamie leaves, telling Harry not to return to his normal way of life. Harry then retrieves his phone, as he had been secretly recording their conversation. Having Jamie's confession to manslaughter, Harry asks Vic to arrest Jamie for Nick's death. However, Jamie's lawyer successfully persuades the judge to rule the confession inadmissible and releases Jamie, who returns home only to not be allowed entry. Harry has suggested Layla get a restraining order. She also reports Jamie's confession of Kyle's murder and turns in a sample of his blood that she washed off Jamie. Now fully unhinged, Jamie stalks and kills Harry's boss. And now for the series finale. I mean, season finale.
I would have been happier if you said series.
Yeah, I know. Jamie has become totally unhinged and is planning to kill everyone Harry cares about and torture him and bring him to the edge. He fails at killing Sonya, who confronts him for a thrill while trying to talk him back to normal. Jamie says silent goodbye to Layla, both knowing it's the last time they'll see each other. At Harry's secluded home, Jamie has kidnapped Eli and threatens to kill him, all while trying to negatively influence Harry. Eli escapes into the woods, and Harry follows, having been shot by Jamie with his own gun. Harry is able to hit Jamie with a rock, dazing him, and Harry runs back to the house to get his backup gun out of the safe. Jamie comes back and taunts Harry, saying that he is just like him and always will be. Harry shoots Jamie, who was not attacking him at the moment. Realizing medics are too far away and he's going to die, Jamie suddenly becomes scared of death, wishing he would not die and saying he's not a bad person. While Harry silently regrets what he's done, Harry promises Jamie he is not alone and holds his hand as he dies. Months later, Harry is still traumatized by the events and encounters of the season. Sonya asks him what Jamie was like in his final moments, to which Harry sullenly replies, scared, and then breaks down in tears and is comforted by Sonya. I think I just did us all a favor right there.
I think you did, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was renewed for a fourth season, by the way.
Super. That's something I will jump on not watching.
Yep.
Okay, then. I appreciate you digging into that so that I didn't have to.
Yeah. Superstore was a hot mess this week.
Yeah. Yeah, a rare miss for Dina as she goes all panicky, frantic, girlfriend-y because Garrett might be flirting with a woman.
Yeah, and she does the Dina thing by banning all interaction with customers at the return desk.
Yeah.
Seems like an impossible thing to do. You know?
Yes. Yes, it does. In a customer service business?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
And Carol's lawyer is there to try to determine the details about her getting electrocuted, and we get to watch more stupidity from Jonah. Because that's apparently his character arc, is being stupid.
Yeah, essentially during his deposition, he alludes that Glenn is incompetent. And Glenn, to his credit, proves that he's not, and he did everything he was supposed to do and did all the updates he was supposed to do, and that the reason why that Carol got electrocuted is because she stuck a screwdriver where she shouldn't have. I mean, that was kind of, and then Jonah felt stupid, and then essentially him and Carol's lawyer kind of decided they were going to maybe date. They teased a love interest type of thing.
Yep.
Yep, that happened. So, I don't know. I'm just sticking it out because it's the last season.
Exactly. And in March, it'll be playing the last one. And
yep.
What'd you think of the unicorn, though?
Well, we had two episodes to watch, did we not?
You did.
No, what did you have two episodes to watch?
I had two episodes of Resident Alien, because I had missed the one the week
before. Well, shit, okay. Watched one, the unicorn, so we're going to have to wait and talk about three episodes next week.
Which one did you watch?
Most recent one.
So you watched In Memory Of?
Yeah.
Okay. So you missed the big move before that.
Yeah. So, which kind of, you know, answers like, what did I miss type of thing? Or, yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, you should still watch it because it was.
Oh, no. I'm going to. Absolutely. And, but let's.
And they're basically doing a fall, a continuation of that in this coming week's episode. So.
Okay. Yeah, so I'll go back and watch A Big Move, and then we'll talk. And we'll just next week we'll talk about all three episodes.
Cool, works for me.
My mistake. So Resident Alien.
Yeah. So I had to watch the one with the where basically like Harry blurts out that Asta's child is the girl that's working at the clinic and kind of opens up that Pandora's box to everybody. And, he does it very bluntly. He's just like, look at the facial structure. Look at the bones. Like, they're the same person. She's about the same age, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. He's very. Keep going. Yeah. Scientific about his. Yeah.
Yep. This was the first time that I got a little bit annoyed with the kids just because. They did the, let's have a dinner party and invite Harry over. And the girl's like, hey, while they're doing that, I'll steal his keys and make a copy. Mm-hmm. And then of course it becomes like the slapsticky comedy type where, everything that could go wrong. And then the little boy's like, now I want to read a poem to you and I want to show you my solar system and, trying to distract him long enough so that she can get the keys back in there.
Yeah.
Dumb.
Yeah, I did like the fact he thought, he really wants to be friends. And then, he finds out that at all. Yeah,
because they break into his place and they touch the floating apple and it electrocutes them. So he's like, all right. And I love how he puts them in duffel bags and carries them upstairs because he's going to take them out into the world and destroy them. And, we end the episode with that woman standing there. And she's like, of course I have a key. I'm your wife, aren't I? And then
I'm jumping into this video. Your wife. And then this week's episode was another great episode, in my opinion.
Yes. Love language.
Yeah. Again, these two episodes were both directed by Jay Chandrasekhar.
Yep.
So I thought that was cool. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So in the previous episode where he goes to when he goes to the dinner party and he kisses the girl, I can't think of her name, the bar hostess.
Yes.
And he claims his penis is suffering from rigor mortis. It's dead.
Yes.
I thought that was hilarious. His wife is in this episode. We find out that basically he had gone out to the cabin. Well, not the real Harry had gone out to the cabin to get away from her. They were getting divorced. They had filed for divorce and he hadn't signed the paperwork, returned her emails, returned her phone calls, returned anything. So she finally showed up for the paperwork to get him to sign it. Mm-hmm. And that's why she was there. I do enjoy how like they have that really nice, like it's like at the end of the episode or middle of the episode, she makes him dinner. They have a great time, on and on and on. And it makes you think that they're going to reconcile. And she's like, well, don't you have anything to say? And he's like, yeah, clean up before you leave. And he walks off. Like, yeah, I think it's pretty fantastic.
Now, my theory, and maybe I'm going to be stating the obvious here, but we got a little bit more backstory of seeing what the original Harry was like in New York. And talking to the forensic guys and stuff like that. I get a feeling that we're going to find out that the original Harry is the one that killed the doctor for some reason, because I think he's out here hiding it made it sound like he was mixed up in some kind of mafia thing or some kind of trouble. And he's out here hiding. And
I didn't think of that, but yeah, you're right. They did allude that there was some sort of shenanigans going on.
Yeah, like he had left quickly and was trying to hide. So my thought is that this doctor discovered something, like maybe he said, oh, hey, wait, this blood work matches up to so-and-so. And so he's like, fuck it, I'm going to kill him.
Yeah. Yeah, because they do determine.
Put quite a wrinkle.
Yeah, they do determine at the end of the episode of the lab work that he was murdered, poisoned. Yep. That's true. I like how the kids and Harry, they kind of,
how they ended the episode?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. How they basically came to a truce.
Yes.
I like how he's basically like, all right, fine, I'll stop trying to kill you. Like, but, you know, and I love how they ask questions. They just start asking questions. Yeah, they're friends. So they're like, so what's outer space like? It's great. You know, like.
What are the Nazca lines? Oh, it's ancient alien graffiti.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Or like, you know, when they're looking at his solar system model, he's like, actually, this is really well done in his bedroom. And he's like, yeah, we even got the, you know, like the moons of Pluto or moons of Jupiter or something like that. And he's like, no, that's a.
Like a space station or something.
A space station or a space hub or something like that. Yeah. We did get a little bit more of the apparently government agents. They're not other aliens, but they're like some sort of government agents that are trying to find the alien, quote unquote.
For the general, quote unquote.
Yeah. Just for the general. Really nothing else was said more than that. I don't know. It's a funny show. You know, he goes, like you said, he went to the reservation and told everyone that, you know, I like, you know, who her daughter, that she had a daughter and who it was. And I like how, and then the next episode she meets up with, when she can, the daughter finds out that she gave her up because while she's going through the paperwork, that she's picking up all this paperwork off the floor and everything that Harry's wife had thrown around, she finds her the birth certificate. And she's just like, just don't tell me my father's that Dick Jamie or whoever it was.
Yeah.
And she just doesn't say anything. She's like, oh, so she storms off. So she goes to tell him, hey, by the way, she found us. Well, it's so-and-so. Well, and you know, how long have you known? I've always known. I like how Harry is sitting there watching him. Mm-hmm. I like their interaction together where, you know, like, because Harry's not afraid of him. And this guy is kind of afraid of Harry because he pulled him through a wall.
Yeah.
So I enjoy how he's like, he's like starting to get angry. And like Harry immediately is just like, hey, I'm right here. And so he like calms right down.
It was so funny watching him like sit down at the booth and just stare at him over his shoulder and then move to the other booth and stare at him. And then ask his dad comes over and it's like, all right, I'm fucking uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was great. He's reading books about ninjas, okay?
Yeah.
Hey, where'd Harry go? I'm a ninja.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Always feared ninjas.
I appreciate the episode overall. I hope we get rid of his wife quickly.
Yes, me too.
We seem like we're going to. But yeah, now that you've said that, I do think there's probably some sort of, we're going to find out that maybe the real Harry killed the town doctor.
I think that's going
to
be
it. He goes, I have to work. Why? The town doctor was murdered. I'm now the town doctor. Wait, you're giving up your practice for this place? Yeah. I guess so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it does seem, now that you've kind of brought that up, it does seem like that's probably what's going to happen.
By the way, since I watch it on my DVR on the Sci-Fi channel, they always have a preview of the next week's episode.
Sure.
Apparently the general, Linda Hamilton.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Not that she's like the greatest actress, but hey, it's a big star poll. So
yeah, it really is. Well, let's see here. I'll just say offhanded, the Connors was good this week.
Oh yeah,
it's a show I watched and I enjoy.
There was no new Prodigal Son. I wanted to say Person of Interest, but yeah, no new Prodigal Son. Mm-hmm. So I can't comment on that.
Yeah, Young Rock was good.
I'm enjoying this show more and more. Mm-hmm. I actually wrote it down because I loved how, oh God, what's his name there? The guy who's interviewing him. I'm drawing a blank.
Oh, Randall Park.
Randall Park, yeah.
He's, I love how Randall himself.
Park. Yes. And I love how, you know, he did the Rocky entrance, you know, he's like, oh, Rocky, and he's like, oh, that's pretty good. And then he talked about the Wild Samoans and he's like, ah, and the Rock's like, yeah, that was good, borderline inappropriate.
Yeah, it was the tongue thing. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's simultaneously like a little cringeworthy watching him like lying to that girl over and over again.
Yeah, it is. And listening to Rocky Johnson lie, because I'll tell you right now, Rocky Johnson never pinned Ric Flair or Roddy Piper ever.
I was going to ask you about that.
I think that's why you don't actually see the three count being hit. They just cut to him talking. Oh man, yeah, the crowd went wild. And realistically, you know what happened in the show, like where Rocky Johnson used to wrestle in front of a sold out Madison Square Garden for 20,000 people and in these big arenas and all this other stuff. And now he's wrestling at a flea market in the early 90s. But he is still like in his mind, he's at Madison Square Garden. That's 1,000% true.
Oh, OK.
Like all of that shit is true. Like none of that is made up. Like that's exactly like when in professional wrestling, you know, when you are starting up. You know, it's like when you're starting out in wrestling, you're wrestling in front of small crowds, you're wrestling, you know, in front of little arenas or little armories or high school gyms or flea markets or wherever you're wrestling in front of small crowds for kind of, you know, $50, low payday, whatever it is. And you work your way up the ladder. And then, you know, maybe eventually you're wrestling in the WWE or New Japan Pro Wrestling or one of the big companies, you know, at that time. There was just basically WWE and WCW, ECW was kind of on the brink around the time where this is taking place. Mm-hmm. And if you're not in one of those two companies, you know, even if you had a big name in the 80s, you know, as you get older, now you start going down the ladder. There's very few wrestlers, comparatively few wrestlers that are in their 40s and 50s and still wrestling on the big stage, more so now than back then, quite frankly, because wrestlers now who are in their 40s and 50s that are still alive, it's because they weren't into hard drugs and hard partying and hard drinking. And a lot of those wrestlers either aren't capable of wrestling anymore or sadly, they're dead. You know, Mr. Perfect, the Road Warriors, I could name all kinds of wrestlers that have passed away because of the hard lifestyle they lived in the 80s, like Rocky Johnson, who also passed away, you know, last year. He was in his 70s, though. But anyhow, so around this time when this was happening, he was on his way down. And when you're on your way down, you're right back in those small venues, those small arenas, small crowds. But a lot of times, just like The Rock said on the show, in his mind, you know, he's still in Madison Square Garden. He's not in front of in a flea market with 50 people, you know. Mm-hmm. So I do appreciate that believability as a exceptionally over the top wrestling fan that I am.
I think you're underselling it, but OK.
Yeah.
And I'm nowhere near the wrestling fan that you are, but I do enjoy the storytelling and I enjoy the fact that, you know, you can then come on here and say, yep, that makes sense. Yep, that was happening and this is accurate and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, I totally believe Rocky Johnson telling people he beat Ric Flair and Roddy Piper and everything because that makes himself look better because those are big names. Mm-hmm. You know, two of the biggest names in wrestling. So that, I mean, I totally believe him saying that, but it didn't happen.
Yeah.
At least if it did happen, it was when, you know, they were just starting out in wrestling and not where it appears that they were, you know, cause like Rocky Johnson started wrestling in 1964, essentially. Mm-hmm. And Flair and Piper started wrestling in the early 70s. So they could have wrestled and been beaten by Johnson when they were just starting out and they were rookies type of thing, you know, that would make sense. However, the way it was depicted in the show, you know, Ric Flair with his red hair, blonde hair and his trunks and everything at that time, that's 80s Ric Flair. And Rocky Johnson retired in 91. So
I like how he made a special comment to say, you know, always compliment him on his robe.
Yes.
What did he say? Like he put extra feathers or extra sequins on it or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Because The Rock's 15 in this. Okay. Mm-hmm. And when The Rock was 15, he was born in 72. I'm looking at Wikipedia. I don't have that off the top of my head. So when he's 15, it's 1987, you know, 1988 time frame.
Yep.
And in 87, you know, Ric Flair is world champion at that time. Roddy Piper is retired from wrestling, allegedly making the movie They Live. You know, so, yeah. anyways.
Gotcha.
Throwing that out there. I did like how the Rock bus driver wouldn't let him get on the bus because he's like, sir, this is for students. He's like, I'm 15. Yeah. So we see Rock in the college, you know, and his dad there telling lies about him. He's going to be on the Wheaties box and all this other horse shit, which, man, that would piss me off if that was my dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And so he just goes and does 36 reps of 225 to try to prove himself to the guys. So there you go.
Yep.
No, it's a show I'll keep watching. It's absolutely on Tuesday nights. So it's
right on Hulu. So
yep,
I enjoy it.
Yep. Ditto. What is that I'm stepping on? Well, it looks like an olive. I know it's not an olive, but it looks like an olive. Ow, shit. Hold on.
Sure.
Go ahead.
So by my count, show-wise, we have WandaVision, which we'll save till the end, of course.
Yep.
We have the last two episodes of Lovecraft Country, and yep, we have the premiere of Superman and Lois to talk about.
That's it. Lovecraft Country. Sad it's over. Wonder if it's going to, yep, get a second season or not.
Still unknown, as far as I've, yeah, heard.
Yeah.
They're still hoping.
So episode 9, Hippolyta shows up
with blue hair.
Yep. And she and company, her, Atticus, Letty, Montrose, they bring Diana. They go to the gimmick there, the time machine. I'm just going to call it the time machine.
Yep.
Hippolyta plugs herself in and sends them back to 1921. To Tulsa so they can get the Book of Names,
yes,
from Tick's mother's family.
Yep.
And because it was destroyed in a fire during the Tulsa Race Massacre, which I don't know if the Tulsa Race Massacre was a real thing, but I do remember, which it would, you know what, I'm sure it is because the show has used real history. Yep, it was. Yep. I remember something happened like this in St. Louis. But yeah, the Tulsa Race Massacre was a real thing that happened May 31st to June 1st, 1921 in, uh-huh, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. 39 people were killed in total. So, but some people stated it's actually between 75 and 300 people. So who knows? That part's disputed.
Right. So yeah, they travel back in time to get the Book of Names, and they have to do the whole time travel thing where even though they know what's going to happen, they have, yeah, to let it happen.
Yep.
You know, and, I was about to say George, it's not George, it's, Montrose.
Yep.
Doesn't want to because there's his friend there and he's like, he's about to die if I don't go over and stop him.
Yeah.
And, you know, they watch him get shot in the head because Tick's like, dude, you got to let this happen, because if that doesn't happen, then you don't get together with my mom and I'm never, yep, born and my son's never born. And, so he basically holds him back. And then, you know, Montrose is like, I remember this night. Some stranger came out of nowhere with a bat and chased them all off and said, you got this. And but no stranger showed up. And they're like, what the hell? And then, yep, they look down at the ground. There's a baseball bat there. Oh, Tick was the stranger.
Yeah, so Tick went and saved them all, saved Montrose and his mother and his uncle George, who were all teenagers.
Yep.
I thought what was important here, though, was that we also see Montrose's father being a bigger piece of shit than Montrose is.
Yes.
You know, making his son, you know, pick a switch and beating him with it and on and on and on. But I'm just here to say that just because that happens to you doesn't mean that that's who you have to be with your kids. So there's really no excuse for that. And, yep, when Tick kind of forgives Montrose a little bit for acting that way, I was a little pissed off because he shouldn't.
Right.
You know, he can let bygones be bygones, if you will, and be like, you know what, that was in the past. I get it. However, don't forgive him for that.
Right.
You know, you still, like, just because your dad treated you like shit doesn't mean that's what you should have done.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's growth. It's evolution.
Exactly. Poor Letty. Oh, man.
Yeah.
You know, she's in the house.
The ringer in these episodes.
Yeah, she's in the house with Tick's mom and grandmother. And, you know, looking for the Book of Names, and she tells the grandmother about it, and you know, she's able to prove to the grandmother who she is and what she's doing there. And so, you know, grandma gives her the book and says, you know, our family is to protect us, and on and on and on. And then she's like, and she tells the grandma, like, no, you can't warn everyone that you're all going to die. Because she know, like, the grandma's like, well, how does it, the Book of Names is destroyed and you didn't get it from one of us? And then she's like, oh, we're dead. We all die, yeah. Don't we?
Yep.
And she's like, but you can't tell anyone, because if you tell someone, then maybe, you know, our history's changed. And I'm never, you know, I never meet Tick and I don't get pregnant and on and on and on. And so she doesn't. And then she literally stands there and they hold hands, and Letty's protection spell protects her as she's, you know, Tick's great grandmother burns to death in front of her. Like,
yeah.
That was intense.
That was intense. So we basically, it was one of those circular time travel loops where they had to go back here because they were always here.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, the reason that the book
as we come to find out,
because Letty always was there. And the reason that, you know, somebody appeared with a bat was because it was Tick.
Yep.
Oof.
Damn.
Yeah. Really heavy.
It really friggin' is. Like, it really is. They get back to 1955. And then we get episode 10, Full Circle.
Which, didn't it feel like 10 minutes into this episode that we were just watching the happy ending?
Yes. Yeah, it did.
Like, I'm just watching it and I'm like, you know, they're driving away. And I know that they were going, they had a mission and they were going there to bind her. But it just seemed like, you know, okay, everyone's saying their peace. They sold the house, you know, we're just, you know, happily ever after kind of thing.
Nope. No, I didn't think they sold the house.
Didn't they? Because they had that guy out there pulling up the sign.
No. I thought a black couple bought the house across the street from her because, in a sense of saying the white people are moving out because the black people are moving in.
Oh.
They walked into her house after and they took the elevator down.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I misread that. I thought that they sold their house.
Yeah, no, they went to the house and then they took the elevator down, if you will. But yeah, I mean, crazy episode. Tick and Letty go to her house to go to that. They go down the basement to the flooding area so they can go to this like mausoleum thing. And they put salt down and they use a spell and everything to pull. To summon Titus.
Yep.
And end up summoning Tix's mother and great-grandmother.
I was going to say, they got everybody.
Well, because at first they needed the help. And they got Tix, you know, his great-great, you know, the woman that Titus raped, his slave that he raped, basically, to.
Yes. Who she kept calling master, which was...
creepy,
realistic, and creepy.
Yeah, they get her there, and they cut a big piece of his flesh off because they need to use that to bind Christina. He somehow is able to escape and find Christina, and he manages to say a couple words before he gets zipped back. But I feel like she picked up on what's going on. Oh, of course, before that, I apologize. We skipped a bunch. You know, they open the book of names. Tick and Letty kind of go into a coma where they go to different places and they learn their roles and everything. And Tick goes to his great-great-great-grandmother and Letty goes to Tick's great-grandmother. And then they all work together in their ancestral realm or whatever they're in to lift the curse from Diana, but her arm, it remains what it was.
Yeah.
All withered and gross.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then they go bind Titus and tear the piece of the flesh off him. And then Letty goes to Ruby basically to get them to help to get a piece of Christina's body for the binding spell. And Ruby at first is like, you're fucked up. You only want me as a sister when you need something, yada, yada, yada. And then she goes to see Christina, Ruby does, and it, for all intents and purposes, it looks like she helps them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get that, you know, the big happy car ride with all of, with Letty and Tick and Montrose and Ruby and Gia and Diana and Montrose, and they're going to Artem to stop Christina, and they have a nice little family sing along.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Which again feels like okay, the end.
Yeah. But Ruby is actually dead, and Christina used her potion of transformation potion to transform into Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
After killing her.
Yeah. 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 And Ruby and Christina, Ruby and Letty, Christina and Letty get into a fight, and she kind of throws her out of the tower. And then she goes, performs a ceremony, and she just fucking shreds Tick's arms open, so the blood is literally pouring out of his body, and she kind of takes a shower in it and does her incantation, and we think all is lost. And then Letty shows up and tries to kill Christina, but she's immortal. She's trying to cast the binding spell, but it's not working
because their bodies have to be touching somehow.
Yeah, so Jiha, you know, she's like, oh, I got this. So she jumps up on the stairwell into the black smoke going up to the moon or whatever, and she uses her tails to connect Tick and Christina. And the binding spell works, and there's a big kind of explosion. And, you know, we find out that from Letty that, well, the reason why she survived the fall from the tower is because Christina put the safety spell back on her, I guess, as a promise to Ruby, because in all intents and purposes, it did look like Christina really cared about Ruby and loved Ruby. Well, however,
it was kind of like a
her immortality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she said she made me promise I wouldn't hurt you.
Yeah.
Before I killed her. It's your fault that I had to kill her. So, yeah.
She seemed to really love Ruby, but wasn't going to let anything get in the way of her getting her immortality.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's why Letty's still alive and can cast a spell and everything. And we find out that the spell didn't just bind Christina from magic. It apparently bound all white people from performing magic, because it's implied that Titus stole the Book of Names and magic from Tick's family, ancestral family.
Right.
Maybe not. So Tick is dead. Mm-hmm. Bled to death, which I was shocked.
I was shocked, but I was kind of glad that they allowed it to happen.
They didn't marry Stuart. They will for season two. They got to bring him back.
Unless they do a completely different group.
Yes. Know? Yes. Then we see I don't think there's another book, and I haven't read the book yet to know if these are all the stories in the book.
Right.
Then we see, while all this is happening, Diana's hanging out in the car reading a comic book. And one of those Shoggoth or whatever it is shows up. And it's the ones from, I'm guessing they're Christina's, and they're attacking the car. And then Tick Shoggoth shows up, and evidently Tick used a spell or whatever and basically made it so to protect Diana.
Mm-hmm.
That was Shoggoth's goal. Because I'm like, where? Because I kept waiting for the Shoggoth to show up while Tick was on this strapped down and he was being cut open and all this other stuff. But we find out that he basically gifted him or her to Diana. Mm-hmm. So then we see the Shoggoths fighting.
Yep.
And then after everyone's kind of they're the four of them, Jiha, Montrose, and Letty are carrying Tick's body off on a makeshift stretcher, if you will. Diana shows up. And Christina's like, Dee, help me, help me. And the Shoggoth is with her, you know?
Yep.
And Diana's got a mechanical arm.
Yep.
Very crooked mechanical arm for today's standards, but 1955 standards, top of the line.
Yeah. More than top of the line.
Yeah. And she crushes Christina's throat pretty severely.
Yeah.
I loved this show. Beginning to end. There's a lot of atrocity in it. There's a lot of violence in it. There's a lot of hard to watch scenes. But all in all, I really, really, really enjoyed this show, and am tempted to buy it on Blu-ray or DVD. Either one. I don't care. I'm actually tempted to buy it in case I want to watch it again someday.
Right.
Because I feel like this is a show I would want to rewatch. Quite frankly.
I really enjoyed it as well. I wouldn't buy it, but I agree with you. It was thoroughly enjoyable.
Yeah. I really dug it quite a bit. And I think what I liked about it so much is that as fictional as it was, they really did tie in some real history with it, you know?
Yes. Yeah, they really did. So you had the believable aspects along with the supernatural. So depending on your bent in the world, you might think that, you know, hey, these things could have really happened.
Yeah. What'd you think of Lois and Superman?
I thought that it kind of felt like maybe Zack Snyder had a hand in this.
Really? How so? Is it so dark, or
it was dark, and it was kind of, I mean, it wasn't dark fully Snyder-esque, but it was definitely darker than most of the Arrowverse shows that we've seen so far. Even Arrow, when it was dark, was just kind of like maudlin, but this was like kind of depressing. What did you think?
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I still enjoyed it. I just felt that it was darker than I expected.
Oh no, see, I didn't get that feeling at all. I thought Arrow was way darker than this ever was.
Interesting.
Yeah, I didn't get any darkness. I actually thought it was really well done. I enjoyed the show. The only thing I really didn't like about it was, you know, the Lex Luthor nemesis. You know, Captain Luthor is his nemesis in this, which here's the thing. We've met Lex Luthor in this realm, if you will.
Yes.
You know, this is definitely not the Lex Luthor that we've met in this realm. So I don't know if this is a Lex Luthor from an alternate universe, or I don't think it's a child or a son or anything like that. So I wasn't a big fan of that.
No, I wasn't either. I was hoping that it was going to be something like a Martian Manhunter type, or, you know, somebody who was going to be more of a foil than just we're going to throw a Lex Luthor at him. Great.
I was kind of disappointed with the Lex Luthor crossover.
No, the reason that I said that it felt dark to me was things like, you know, in the first episode, we deal with, you know, the flashbacks of Father Kent dying, which has always been part of the mythos. But then his mom dies, and we have to go through the funeral, and we have to go through the mourning period and how much she meant to the community. And now she's gone. We had to deal with the fact that Clark was just fired from the Daily Planet because they're downsizing because, you know, the world doesn't need newspapers anymore. And this big company has come in and is buying up all this stuff, and the banks are repossessing the farms. And, you know, this was more, less superhero-y and more like real world problem shit.
I mean, it's not true though, you know?
Right. Oh yeah. It definitely all felt very realistic. But yeah, I did enjoy it quite a bit. I like the interesting take on the twins and, you know, how it's the depressed one who ends up seemingly having the powers. Although we still haven't ruled out that Super Jock has powers as well, maybe just different powers.
Right, or they're just still kind of quelled. I'm going to say the word. I'm going to use the word quelled. Recessed. Yeah. He hasn't fully. Yeah.
Because right now all we've seen is basically invulnerability, you know, and the heat vision. Mm-hmm. Could be that the other one gets, you know, the strength or the ability to fly or right. something like that. I don't know. I'm definitely interested and I will keep watching. The only other thing that I worry about, maybe this is just me being like pessimistic, but you know as well as I do that pilots are often different from the actual show.
Yes, they are.
So I'm concerned that, you know, we could find that this pilot was really good, but then when they get into the next episode, it's a completely different tone and yep. feels completely different. I liked the inclusion of Lois's dad as the general and the fact that he knows who Clark is and, mm-hmm. you know, likes working with Superman, but also hates the fact that Clark is, you know, Superman.
Yes. Yeah. I did like the fact that he was like, Lois, you can't expect to be married to Superman and have a normal life. That's just not in the cards.
Yeah. And even throws an extra. Even throws an extra dagger in there with like, you know, I warned you about this.
Yep.
Yep. So I guess that just leaves WandaVision.
It really does, yeah.
Okay, so movies. You said you got two of them.
Yeah, I watched two. I watched one that I know you watched already in Freaky.
Ooh.
Ken and I hit the old red box.
Yeah.
And we got Freaky. And as a whole, I enjoyed the movie. You know, it's their spin, a Freaky Friday type thing. I thought we got some good kills in it.
The opening kills were amazing.
Yeah, the opening kills were the best. Yes. Some kills later on we had were good. But maybe this is going to be controversial, but I thought Vince Vaughn was a better Millie Kessler than Catherine Newton was in Millie Kessler.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm glad you felt the same way.
Oh, God. When I was watching that with my girlfriend, we both were like, he really is fucking selling being a teenage girl.
Yeah, I really thought that Vince Vaughn was a much better Millie Kessler than, yeah.
Yeah, he nailed it. He knocked it right out of the park.
Yep. So.
Loved it. Good movie. Again, like you said, it's the Freaky Friday take, so they switch bodies. They got to get back before midnight the next day, and I enjoyed it. It was a fun little slasher flick, because usually when you do the Freaky Friday body swap thing, it's to learn about each other, and you know, it's father and son, or mother and daughter. This was a serial killer and a teenage girl, and it helped the teenage girl get out of her shell a little bit. But the main drive here wasn't to like learn about each other. It was to get the fuck out of each other's bodies.
Yes. Yes, it was. Yeah. I thought it was interesting that he, when he got into her body, he was like, oh, hey, boobs. And then when she got into his body, like initially, like he's already showered. He's already done this, that and everything. And then finally later on, you know, we see that he's like, oh, hey, this is my penis. Look, as I flap it back and forth. This is crazy. Yeah. You know, so we did get that from him later in the episode.
Yep.
If you will, her in his body. But I thought that was kind of a little weird at first because I was just like, okay, she doesn't seem to care.
Right.
But, yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I did really enjoy it. The other movie we watched, I did not enjoy as much, or maybe even at all. The Kids and I, as in Wesley and Addison, sat down and we watched ourselves Tom and Jerry.
Oh.
So that's something I did.
Oh, God.
Yep. I purposely did that.
Yikes.
Yeah. Well, okay. Essentially, you know, it's the movie, one of the the HBO in theaters and on HBO Max that day type of movies, you know? So I'm paying for HBO Max, might as well take advantage of it and watch everything. And it's something Addison did want to watch and Wesley was interested in as well. And we sat down and watched it. And, you know, it's not the, it's legitimately like the old school. It's a mix of live action and animation, but it's not computer animation. It looks like the old school 2D hand drawing animation, like say the first Space Jam or Songs of the South or any of the other, you know, live Roger action animated movies. Roger Rabbit. There we go. I couldn't think of something besides Sounds of the South, I realized, but yeah. So, you know, long and the short of it, I don't need to watch it again ever in life. I didn't think it was terrible. I just didn't care about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good. I really don't have any interest in it. I'm glad that you've watched it so that I can know about it. But yeah, I can't see myself wanting to care about watching it. So.
Yeah, I mean, I legitimately would not bother if I were you.
Yeah, I can't see that I would gain anything out of watching it. So yeah, I think I'll skip this one.
Yeah, I wouldn't bother if I were you.
Excellent.
Yeah. News and trailers now, I guess, because you didn't watch any movies, you said.
Correct. Yeah, I sent you a number of trailers. Some of them looked good. Some of them looked interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We got a new Pixar movie coming out called Luca. Looks like two brothers who are sea monsters. Whenever they dry out, they look human. So it's Splash for kids.
Yeah.
It'll be cute. The One, which was a movie where science has shown you can determine who your one soulmate is.
Yeah. Didn't we watch a show about that already?
We did.
Yeah.
But this one's coming to Netflix.
Yeah.
We got the first trailer for MODOK on Hulu.
That looks fantastic.
Yes, it does. Can't wait.
Yeah.
And then I sent you one for, we finally got the trailer for Shadow and Bone, which is based on a young adult novel series. Looks pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
I'll check that out. It's on Netflix. But I think the highlight of the trailers this week for both you and I had to be Kid 90.
Oh yeah. The Punky Brewster. She took a camera and went around everywhere.
Yeah. Basically in the 90s, she videotaped everything with her, her friends. As she says in the thing, there were like 12 child stars at the time. And they all did everything together and they were buddies and, you know, they knew each other and she videotaped all of it. And now years later that she's become popular again, she finally opened up the vault and they're using that footage plus real life interviews with, you know, Mark Paul Gosselaar and Brian Austin Green. And I think Will Smith's even in there at some point. And they're telling the story of what it was like to be child stars in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Looks awesome.
It looks fantastic. I mean, like, I once I have Peacock here at the middle of this month, when WWE Network, you know, gets switched over to Peacock, essentially, I'll have Peacock for free. That's how I look at it, because I'm already paying for WWE Network. And, yeah, I plan on watching the new Punky Brewster series. So
nice.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to get Peacock because I think you got to pay for the tier that that's on, but
you do. Yes, we'll see. Yep.
That was it for trailers. You got any news?
Well, I thought we had more trailers than that. No, that's it. MODOK, The One. Oh, Shadow and Bone. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yep. No, that's it. You shared the news of the Dexter revival show will show us what he's been doing these last 8 years.
Yeah, you must be excited about that.
Well, it's on Showtime, so my thought is I'll wait for it all the up, and then I'll get a month and watch it.
There you go.
Yeah. I don't really have any news. Bruce Campbell teased that, hey, I just shot a movie in some place with some director type of thing. So I thought that was funny.
Which we all know what that is.
In London, yeah. Doctor Strange. But we don't know what his cameo is. So that was cool.
Yep.
Regal shared that it's called Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yes.
Only in movie theaters this Christmas. So
I appreciated that. Yep.
Me too. Disney announced Star Wars The Bad Batch will have its series premiere on May 4th.
Yep.
And that Loki will make its debut on June 11th. So, yes. You know, we're going to finish WandaVision this week, have like a week off. We're going to get Winter Soldier and Falcon. And then that's only 6 episodes. So then we'll have like a month or so, maybe a little bit more in between before we get Loki. So that's not bad.
Yeah. They also announced that, what was it?
Twilight Zone?
No, I was going to say the Mighty Ducks Game Changers premieres March 26th on Disney Plus.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
April 16th is a show called Big Shot. It's going to be John Stamos, who, after getting ousted from the NCAA, a hot-headed men's basketball coach must take a job at an all-girls high school. He soon learns that teenage girls are more than just X's and O's. They require empathy and vulnerability, foreign concepts for him.
Sure.
May 14th is going to be season 2 of High School Musical, The Musical, The Series, if you want to get in on that.
Just going to go past.
And July 2nd, we're getting Monsters at Work. Takes place the day after Monsters, Inc. power plant started harvesting the laughter of children to fuel the city of Monstropolis. So it's a direct sequel to Monsters, Inc.
Is it a movie or a series?
I believe it is a series because it says it follows the story of Tyler Tustman, an eager young monster who graduated top of his class. Always been a scarer.
So it's not even the original. Well, they might have cameos, if you will, but it's not even the original character, per se.
Right. July 16th is going to be the reboot of Turner and Hooch. July 23rd will be
Need to be rebooted.
No, it didn't.
July what?
July 23rd is Chippendale Park Life, which follows the two tiny troublemakers to trying to live the good life in a big city park while having giant-sized sky-high adventures.
Cool.
Yep. That was it for that stuff. But yes, the Twilight Zone thing, that was very interesting.
Well, the headline says that CBS canceled Twilight Zone ahead of the Paramount launch, which is surprising because, I mean, they're doing a Beavis and Butthead movie or whatever for the Paramount channel. So you would think they would want the Twilight Zone. But then when you read the article, it says that Jordan Peele stepped away. He didn't want to do it anymore. So there is a difference between it being canceled and he doesn't want to do it anymore. But I guess they have to technically cancel this run if they want to do a new run down the line, maybe, or another reboot or relaunch or whatever.
That was the impression I got.
I thoroughly enjoyed these two seasons of the Twilight Zone we got. It's hard to compare anything to the original, but I feel like a lot of people look at the original with, you know, rose-colored glasses. Not every episode was gold. Yes, there were some amazing episodes, some really great stories, but, you know, there was like 100-something episodes. Not every single one of them was good.
And I was actually going to say the same to you just now about you saying that you thoroughly enjoyed both seasons, because I distinctly remember us not liking some of this last season.
Yeah,
like, it felt like every other episode was terrible.
Yeah, right. No, you're right. As a whole, I did enjoy them, but yeah, I get exactly what you're saying.
Which only fuels your statement as true, which is, you know, it's easy to say this is a very good series. Yeah. While they still have some bad episodes, it doesn't make the series bad. There's just some bad episodes.
I mean, you know, the first run was 156 episodes.
Yep.
They're not all great.
Wow.
That's the second run, 85 to 89, was 65 episodes. Friggin' no one talks about that. You know?
Nope.
Third run, which only lasted one season, but had 43 episodes in its one season. I'm pretty sure that was one that was hosted by Forrest Whitaker.
Oh, yep.
Yeah. I remember watching that because I just remember watching it and being like, this isn't very good.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting bit of news here. They said, after years of rumors to the effect, Warner Media has finally made it official that J.J. Abrams will produce a new Superman feature film written by best-selling author and comic book writer Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Really?
It's not immediately clear whether Henry Cavill will return to reprise the role, although nope. Coates' initial statement suggests that his movie will be in the shared continuity of DC film universe.
Well, I just read earlier yesterday that Henry Cavill is officially done as Superman after the Snyder Cut.
Interesting.
Yeah. But J.J. Abrams recently did a very good Spider-Man book mm-hmm. where Peter Parker is an adult and his son is at 13 is all of a sudden developed powers that I really enjoyed. It was a really good like 5 or 6 issue story.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is very interesting. Amazon mm-hmm. is going to be working on a G.I. Joe TV series focusing on Lady J.
That seems interesting, I guess.
It's going to be live action. Eric Olson is the creator and showrunner. Doesn't have a title. It says this will be a standalone story that focuses on Jay, but the program will connect with the wider G.I. Joe universe in some capacity.
Hmm. Okay.
Interesting. So we got a little more detail. Remember last week I shared a teaser with you on Jupiter's Legacy and we had no idea what it was about? They've shared some still photos, which, okay, they're great. But more importantly, they give an explanation. It says the first image shows Josh Duhamel and Leslie Bibb as veteran superhero spouses Sheldon and Grace Sampson, a.k.a. the Utopian and Lady Liberty, and Ben Daniels as Sheldon's brother Walter, a.k.a. Brainwave. It says the series focuses on a group of aging superheroes who want to pass down their legacy to their superpowered children, but the kids have different ideas of how to live the superhero life, causing conflict with both their parents and some new villains. Mm-hmm. The 10-issue comic book series was published in 2013, and it was followed by the prequel series Jupiter's Circle in 2050. So that'll be interesting. I hope that it's not that the kids are like angsty teenagers and they're like, I just want to do my own thing, because that's going to get old real quick. You know me. I hate
that. Super quick, yep.
And I opened this window up because it popped up right as we were getting ready to do the podcast, and I haven't even read it yet, so this is going to be all new to me, but it said, the headline says, details about Ryan Reynolds' Netflix time travel movie The Adam Project revealed. So I was like, okay, I'm sold.
Yeah, me too.
Ryan Reynolds will be starring in an upcoming Netflix original feature called The Adam Project, and it's all about time travel. But if you're expecting Christopher Nolan-style puzzle box, you might be in for a surprise. They talked to screenwriter Jonathan Tropper, where he revealed new details. To me, the time travel was just a device. The movie is not a hardcore sci-fi time travel movie. It's a movie about people. For me, it was more about the character and the story of a boy who's lost his father and is trying to come to terms with what that means through a really interesting adventure. I'm never going to write a Christopher Nolan type movie about time travel. That wouldn't interest me. For me, it's about finding that story that appeals to the little kid in all of us. The movie centers around Reynolds, a time traveler who returns to meet his 13-year-old self to track down their father, Mark Ruffalo, in order to course correct the future. Nice. Mark Ruffalo and Ryan Reynolds. Fuck, I'm there.
Yeah.
Deadpool and the Hulk.
Yeah.
And that is all that I've got for news.
Well, I guess that just leaves us with
WandaVision.
WandaVision. So if you don't want to hear about it, we'll talk to you next week.
Don't want to hear it, here it goes.
Yeah, and if you do want to hear about it, well, here it goes. Previously On is the name of the episode. What did you think?
Yeah. I thought that this was brilliantly done.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get any real forward movement, but we kind of did. This was all about A, understanding the way that things have come to be, and B, kind of retconning some of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, we got kind of a more in detailed kind of origin story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, Agatha, you know, it turns out she's not playing the evil person. She was drawn here because she is a witch from way back, and she has a certain type of magic. What was hers? Like wild magic or something?
Yeah, something like that. The episode opens with her in Salem, Mass in 1693, and she's put on trial by her coven for practicing dark magic. And as they attempt to kill her, she drains all of their powers into herself.
Including her mom.
Yep, including her mom. And, you know, when her mother's like, she told her mother, I can be good. And she's like, no, you can't. Yeah. So it's kind of ironic when at the end, you know, we have,
the same thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she essentially was drawn to this town because of Wanda's use of magic, and she thought she had found a kindred spirit. She's like, how could somebody do all this? And so she thought that she was finding another powerful witch, and she found Wanda, and she's been trying to figure it out this whole time. And basically, she's kind of pissed because Wanda did all this stuff without even realizing she was doing it. And, you know, as Agatha says, she had to study, and she had to work at it, and build up incantations to be able to do even a fraction of what Wanda did just by waving her hand.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you see that, like, Agatha basically makes Wanda walk through these doors because Wanda doesn't know about magic too, because Agatha's like, you even see Agatha say, like, didn't you walked into this temple? Didn't you see the runes that were marked on the walls? I mean, only the witch that cast the runes can actually use their magic. Like, how do you not know all this? Like, that was the other thing that, you know, Agatha was perplexed about, that Wanda didn't know anything about magic, but yet she possessed magic.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see her love of old television shows because her dad had all, they were in their country, this war-torn country, they still had TV night, and she loved Dick Van Dyke, and, you know, they were practicing English on TV night, and they had, you know, her and her brother Pedro were, you know, little kids in this, and we see the you know, how the house explodes, and then the undetonated bomb.
Mm-hmm.
That had Stark Industries on it, and that's why Wanda and Pietro became radicalized and wanted to fight against Stark because of this incident. And they kind of retcon this with Agatha basically saying, oh, so you were born a witch, but you didn't know it, and no one trained you, but you somehow basically used some rudimentary magic to stop the bomb from going off. That's how the bomb didn't go off.
Right. She altered the probability, which brings it back to her comic powers rather than her MCU powers, which seem to be based on the Mind Stone.
Right. Because then that's the next thing we see is, you know, Wanda and the Mind Stone reacting to Wanda. And it's the Mind Stone essentially didn't make her who she was. It just... maybe it did change them a little bit, but essentially it activated her magical abilities.
Amplified them.
Yeah.
Which and then makes you wonder, like, did Pietro always have abilities as well?
Sure. Yeah. Cause we see the Hydra scientists basically saying, like, you know, everything that's active, you know, that's they come in contact with that stone, they've all died. You know, everyone's been killed and Wanda wasn't. And then we see her and Vision kind of like having watching Malcolm in the Middle together at the Avengers compound and everything. They both feel alone and isolated for different reasons. You know, Wanda's experienced traumatic loss and Vision has never been close enough to someone to experience loss. So that was cool. And then we see Wanda finally going to S.W.O.R.D., and this is where I expected to see she was going to steal Vision's body, because remember, that's what they told us, right?
Yeah, they specifically said, or Hayward said that she stole the body.
Yeah, but instead, we see her show up, and Hayward talks to her, and actually, Hayward, I thought, was decent as fuck. Like, he was sincere. Sorry, I think it's our first F word of the episode. He was really cool. He was like, Wanda, you asked to see him. There he is. Like, I want you to show him that he's not, he's a mechanical being. He's $3 billion worth of whatever it was, unobtainium or something like that. And
vibranium.
I know. I'm not a good, vibranium. Yeah. I'm not a good fan. I couldn't think of it. And, but he's no longer alive and we have to, you know, dismantle it. He's like, well, I want to bury his body. And she's like, well, I, and basically he was like, yeah, I respect that, but I can't give you $3 billion worth of vibranium to go bury in the ground for someone else to dig up.
Right.
And he, very reasonable, I thought. Like, he actually almost seemed compassionate. And then she breaks through the glass and goes down to his body, and he tells the guards to stop. She feels Vision's head, and he's like, I can't feel him. I can't feel him. And she leaves.
But did you notice that Haywood kept saying odd things to her? Like, he would, and I wish I could remember the exact wording, but it was like he'd make little comments like, you know, well, couldn't you just bring him back to life? And she's like, what? And he's like, nothing. You know, he was, it was kind of like when they were inside of Westview, where he was making little, like, subtle, like, it, like, he knew more than he was letting on. Like, he was testing her.
Well, when he said that, I thought he was more posing like a, you know, I can't give you back his body because, you know, like, you know, what if you bring him back to life? Okay, yeah, maybe I guess it was fishy. At the time, I kind of dismissed it as his justification. But yeah. I guess, you know.
No, I guess maybe, I got a sinister vibe from it.
I really like, didn't, but I could see it. I can see it.
We've only got one episode left to find out.
Yeah. But, you know, she leaves the house. She leaves S.W.O.R.D. without Vision's body.
Mm-hmm.
And she drives to Westview to the lot with just the foundation. And it's got, you know, like the deed in there. And it's from Vision. And it's like, hey, he bought this for them to live their life together there. And that's when she loses it and she breaks down, and her grief is what causes this Westview to become what it becomes. And we know why Westview was picked, if you will, because Vision bought the lot.
Yes.
And she somehow manifests a new Vision and changes the town and does everything basically out of grief and puts her hex across the entire town.
Yes. And then, so that catches us up.
Yes.
And we essentially get to see her. Well, sorry, that's the last scene. So she basically comes out and finds Agatha holding the kids hostage.
And she's in Agatha's in a costume now, if you will.
Yep.
You know.
And basically Agatha tells her, she's like, you are using chaos magic. Yep. That makes you the Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, the mythical.
Roll credits.
Yeah. Yeah. So finally one is called the Scarlet Witch.
Yep.
Which is cool, finally.
Yep.
And then we get a little mid-credit scene, if you will.
Yeah.
Where S.W.O.R.D. reveals Hayward's Project Cataract, which is the original White Vision, if you will. And he used chaos magic from Wanda, from something. I thought it, maybe it was the drone. I don't know.
Yeah,
that she brought back and wrecked.
Yeah, it was the drone, and it kind of had like remnants of the magic. So
yeah, and they used that to power up this Vision, which in the comic books, Vision was white.
Yep.
Like on the West Coast Avengers and stuff like that. So, I want to know where the scene came from, though, where Wanda allegedly, because we saw the footage of her breaking in and stealing Vision's body. That clearly didn't happen.
Right.
So
I think it's going to go back to Hayward. I think that there's more to Hayward than meets the eye.
And there probably is.
And that he doctored that to get everybody on his side.
Yep. Well, I really enjoy this show.
I love it. Yeah. I cannot wait for it to be over just so that I can go back and rewatch it.
Yes, I also like how they're handling this. They're not revealing the names of the episodes until they air. They're not revealing like a next time on Wanda type of thing. And then they're doing toys right finally, because they ruined who's going to be Captain America and Falcon and Winter Soldier.
And the Baron Zemo mask and
yeah. And we also saw that, you know, all I can think of is Johnny Ace now, and that's not who it is, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Whereas in this one, after the episode aired, then they said, oh, hey, look at these new toys. You know, Funko Pops of Agatha and the Vision, and, you know, the Hasbro released one of their Marvel Legends figures of the Vision in white and everything. So I thought that was.
Yes. Very well done. You know, they probably had them being manufactured, and then they were like, yep, sit on it.
Yeah, so but nothing got leaked either, which was cool. Nothing got leaked type of thing.
Yep.
So. Yep.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be over. I mean, this week, that means that, well, you've got a couple episodes of The Unicorn, but we're not gonna watch The Sinner.
No.
We're not going to watch Lovecraft Country, because that's all over.
Yeah.
This will be our last WandaVision, so yeah, we're... Yep. But, you know what comes back this week, tomorrow night?
What?
Flash. Savior of the DC Universe.
We'll see.
I'll plug it in. I'll watch it.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I'll watch it. I'm not going to not watch it, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's it for me this week.
Yeah, that's it for me.
All right. Well,
on Twitter, I'm the Superstar ML.
And I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K.
That's our show.
We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah.